What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, more pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today, we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Reds. So they actually have their rotation set. They are one of the clearest teams out there of just like, yes, this should be their five. Maybe they do get one more veteran for some depth because they don't really have too much at the moment. And that would be really, really upsetting because their number five being Chase Burns. And we're going to talk about him in a moment, but first we got to do his clearest comp, which is Hunter Green. Hunter Green, of course, just had a phenomenal season with the Reds, and he pitched not enough innings. It was 150 innings in 2024, where he was great, and then he went about 110, 112 this past season. But he did incredible things, like, I don't know, throwing two ticks harder on his four-seamer and his slider. The strike rate on that slider was phenomenal as well. He has a splitter, and a lot of times people want to talk about the splitter. It does not do much for him. It is a sub 50% strikeout rate to lefties. Strike rate to lefties. It is a sub 10% put-away rate to lefties. And you could make an argument that it makes the four-seamer better for Hunter Green because the splitter exists. But let's be honest, this is not a pitch that batters fear. Really is the issue here is volume. You know it. Hunter Green is going to have a 25% to 30% strikeout rate, if not higher than 30%, because of that harder fastball and because the slider is just better and better commanded every single year. He also is a little bit better at the vert as well. And the one positive I do want to say about his injury history is that it's not in his top half, it's in his bottom half. This was a groin injury and not an elbow injury, not a shoulder injury, etc. You can make the argument that throwing harder also has to do with your lower body, and you're putting strain on your body in other ways to throw hard. Thus, the groin strain makes a little bit of sense. And I don't know what to do with ranking Hunter Green. I really don't. Because he is likely to get injured again. Does he have the same injury tag as Glasnow, DeGrom, Sale, Snell, those kinds? I don't think so. It's feasible that he can go 150, 160 again on like the other ones that are less likely to. And it's elite. If he were to go 30 plus starts, he would be in that conversation with the top three guys. That is how good we expect Hunter Green to be at this point. But I can't put him there due to volume concerns. I also have to say that I don't think he would be as efficient in starts as those other three, which means that, okay, I can't put him at three or one, two, three. I can't put him at four really, or five. And then you throw in the injury stuff. I'm probably going to have him around 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. If you want to put him higher and say, look, I think that there's a decent enough chance that he goes 28 starts or whatever, then you would be gaining value theoretically on draft day. Fine. Go ahead and do that. I'm just generally not going to go for someone who I just have too much haze with. I probably will feel differently in like May when he's still healthy and everything. But it's really tough for me to rank Hunter Green. Next up, we're going to talk about Nick Lodolo. Nick Lodolo had a phenomenal 2025 season, finally gaining in rhythm. And it was really cool to see him go most of the year without injury and to see how he could actually develop if he got every 5 days on the mound. And what we did see was a higher strike rate on his curveball, a swatch approach, changeups down and away to right-handers, sinkers and four-seamers upstairs and inside generally to right-handers. And then against lefties, he did a lot better getting strike rates on his curveball, 7 points more on his strike rate, but it was just under 60% as he still tugs them a little too far to the right. But there is an oddity about that curveball for Nick Lodolo. It lost movement 3 inches and it still had the same velocity. It was pretty much the same pitch, let's have less movement on it. And that did mean he got far more strikes against righties as well as lefties with the curveball, so it was just easier to wrangle for him. But it is a little concerning. Also, I would say that his string of health is not one that I would really bank on for a full year. I would also mention that he had an 80%+ left on base rate, which is opening the door for negative regression. Sub 5% walk rate does just not seem like the kind of guy that Nick Lodolo is long term. And I feel like there's too much that went right for Nick Lodolo to have the season he just had for me to put him in the same vein as like Framber Valdez. And I initially had Nolan McClain behind Nick Lodolo, but I'm going to flip that now. I definitely feel that Nick Lodolo is more susceptible to a lower floor in that park with his injury history, also with the squeezing the most out of his stuff last year. So theoretically, he could get better against lefties with the curveball, and that would be a huge deal. Maybe he doesn't have the same ICR marks on his fastballs to right-handers. Actually, he's able to get them inside better. Maybe that is a big factor too, and that can really change things. At the end of the day, though, I don't think that Nick Lodolo is the kind of play I want to make where he needs to... It's unlikely he has a better season than last year, unless he's just healthy throughout the entire year, which I think would be very shocking. And it's more likely than not he has a worse year, and we don't know how low that floor goes. So I'm generally more out on Lodolo than I was before, and actually, I'm more in on his teammate Andrew Abbott, and I might even flip them, and I know that sounds wild. That sounds wild. This is like 22% strikeout rate. Andrew Abbott with like a 2.76 ERA, and we know that was fluky. Come on, right? Right? Well, I actually start to understand him just a little bit more, right? He used to allow far more home runs off of his four-seamer. It was double-digit home runs to right-handers in both 2023, 2024, but in 2025, he allowed just 5 of them. And I don't really think that the four-seamer itself was the shift. It was more of a physical thing, first of all, that he moved closer to the first base side of the rubber. And he's throwing a little bit more crossbody, adds a little bit more deception, and it hides the ball just a little bit longer against right-handers. But it's also the fact that he got better with his changeup. And that changeup was something now that batters needed to pay more attention to. It kept them honest, and that meant they can't go fastball hunting as much as they did before. He also raised it to 25% usage and 63% strikes for that slow ball. So that's a huge, huge deal. Those two things combined, just a better delivery to help out his arsenal as a whole, and then, of course, the changeup just being better too. And it's also a curveball that landed more often inside the zone. It raised its strike rate massively, and now you have this 3-point drop in walk rate. More strikes on this changeup, more strikes on the curveball. Big deal there, and less damage off of the fastball. And that kind of makes sense to me. You have also the left-handed blueprint get better. You have the sweeper that's added extra depth to it without losing velocity, which is awesome. And he was able to gravitate to the down and away spot of the plate. Down and away corner against lefties is what I'm trying to say. My gosh, I can't say words. And it was a much more effective pitch against lefties because of that. He has the fastballs that he wants to go inside with those. This is actually a refined Holly, in my view. I think he's really coming into his own as your Vasquez type, your Webb type. And I like this. I like that he's able to limit more home runs against inside of the home park. I like that the changeup's getting better. We've seen success with these things. This is more stable to me than Nick Lodolo, believe it or not. And it's possible that the strikeouts do go up if he's able to help out that changeup a little bit more, as the sweeper should do its job against left-handers. So I'm a fan. I'm actually shocked how much of a fan I am. And this is a stable guy you will not drop your entire season. He's not just a Toby. I know it was a 115 whip last year. I think that that can stick around, if not be a little bit better if the hits go a little bit more his way. Brady Singer is a Toby. And it's a whole arsenal that we know already, and he's just the same guy. He's actually tried a little different things here and there, like the four-seamer and the cutter. And to give him all the credit, if you take away two disaster starts of seven earned runs and 2.1 innings of Brady Singer, it would be 30 starts of a 3.38 ERA and a 1.17 whip. And I know you can't play that game. I mean, one of them was at the Nationals, and like, you're not going to bench him for that, right? You're going to have it. But I really want to just highlight the fact that for 30 starts, everything's great. And it's just two of them that really hurt. So that's bad for head-to-head. Oh, I mean, it's good news for head-to-head. And then you have the Roto guys don't care about that. Fine. But I will mention, I still feel like Singer just doesn't really know what to do against lefties. The sinker just is not that pitch. He did lower his home run rate last year in Cincinnati, which is so strange, as he dropped his ground ball rate with higher sinkers. So 43% ground ball rate as opposed to like 49-50%. That's very odd, and it doesn't quite make sense to me. But at least like it helps the whip, because that means fewer hits allowed, right? He had a drop in BABIP because it's fewer ground balls, and ground balls are the highest BABIP of all balls in play, save for like line drives, but line drives are just such a weird and unstable, non-sticky thing year to year. So I can't really tell you that Brady Singer is this brand new guy. I don't even want to say that the higher sinkers are good, because he should be allowing more home runs with that instead of far fewer. And I'm not seeing the development I really want from him to believe that he's going to be anything different. Also, like, this, the slider is not this 20% swing strike rate pitch now to right-handers either with the sweeper. So, yeah, it's all just, ugh. If you were in a quality start league and you really, really need innings, then, like, okay, fine, Brady Singer. But I consider him a 15-team Toby, and I feel like in your 12-teamers, I feel the whip is still going to be suspect, and I think he got a bit fortunate last year to have those 30 starts over 3.38 ERA and a 1.17 whip. All right, Chase Burns is the one that I teased at the beginning of this, and I will mention him now. I've got so many thoughts about it, and I flip-flopped this entire offseason about where I should be ranking him. There also are no fringe pitchers. These are the five, and then you have some random ones to know who I do not believe will be threatening. Maybe there's one, but probably in all likelihood, no. And then they only have a trio of prospects and nothing that is exciting. So it's really going to be the Chase Burns talk next. I'm going to tell you about him after this break. I feel like I'm going to be really stupid and draft Chase Burns where I shouldn't. And I want to put him, I mean, after doing this, I want to put him above all of the young guys. That is, above Campbell Schuttler and Jacob Mizorowski and Nolan McLean and Bubba Chandler. Because, A, he has the spot already. We know that. B, he's going to have more volume, I think, than the other ones, at least in a per game standpoint after they shut him down last year. And they showcase that they're fine throwing over 80 pitches with him already. C, he's already shown the ceiling with four straight games of 10 strikeouts. I'm not going to include the one inning of the Speedway game that got rained out. But then again, it was two strikeouts in one inning. Four, I actually think that his ability to add more pitches is overlooked by people, where he can be a changeup guy to lefties more than like 10% of the time. It can be like a 20-25%, and I think it's actually a decent changeup that he commands well, which leads me to five. He has above average command, and in those games where he had those strikeouts and then just got shut down for the rest of the year being like a one inning or two inning reliever, it was unreal pitch separation up and into right-handers, down and away to lefties, down and away sliders. Like, you could draw a line through both of them, just an even split, one triangle for sliders and then the top right triangle for fastballs. It was awesome, and I love it. Oh, by the way, he throws like 100 miles per hour. So fine, if you're scared because, hey, look, he's going to get hurt because he's young and he throws hard, okay. If you want to do that, sure, I get it. That's a rule that you can stick with, and that's totally fine. The coolest part is that this is not the classic two-pitch flamethrower with control issues. That is not Chase Burns. And I actually have this this feeling that he's not going to be that two-pitch guy. He just didn't have time. He didn't have time to really develop into a three-pitch guy. Generally, when you have someone come up to the majors, they just do the things that they know are best, and they just lean on those as much as they can. And then when they get comfortable, they start expanding out the arsenal. Burns never got that opportunity, not to mention he was destroying with just the two, really. And then he got demoted to two innings a game or something like that, right? So Chase Burns, to me, I feel, is in such a great situation. The biggest flaw is that he likely is going to allow home runs in Cincinnati. The four-seamer is not as good as you want it to be. Even though you see like 18 inches, 19 inches of vert, he has an extremely high attack angle, which means the swing strike rate on it should be like 15%, but it's really down to like 11% or so. He gets fewer whiffs with it than you want him to. It also means that you're going to get guys who are hunting for that fastball, they get it, and they launch it. So that might spell out a 4 ERA with a 110, 112 whip season, which is annoying to say the least. And you're going to get the strikeouts. You are going to get, if he goes 150 innings, he could have 175 strikeouts just from that, right? If not more. I mean, it's really ridiculous. So I'm in. I feel like we're going to see a better, more complete version of Chase Burns this year. I feel that you watch him pitch and it's just, yeah, this is a pitcher. This is a legit stud in the making. And POV also says like he's absurd. So I like that too. I've convinced myself to draft Burns. I don't think he's going to be that hipster. I don't think he's going to, I mean, sure, he's going to have some bad games. You're just going to have to deal with that. But I think his stuff is just so good. And I'm willing to take a chance that this isn't the year he gets injured. All right. On the names to know side, Brandon Williamson and Julian Aguilar both had Tommy John in 2024, and they missed all of 2025. So we're curious to see if they appear this year early on or later on. With Aguilar, I'm not excited in the slightest. It's like 94 mile per hour sinkers without any sort of changeup or slider that is exciting. I'm just not in there. Brandon Williamson was kind of interesting. He did get 100 plus innings in 2023, and then obviously pitched some in 2024. He can be a swatch with a cutter that goes inside as well to right-handers at like 90 miles per hour, 92 mile per hour four-seamer. I'm very interested to see how this plays out, but I would think between him and the next guy I'm going to mention are the two that the Reds will lean on earlier on the season if they do have an opening. And the second one is Rhett Lauder, who I think we'll actually see first before Brandon Williamson, as Brandon Williamson still hasn't pitched anything since returning from Tommy John, right? And Rhett Lauder, we did see him in 2024 for a 1.17 ERA in six outings. It was a 1.27 whip, which is kind of hilarious to see an ERA underneath a whip. But he then had forearm and oblique injuries in 2025 that plagued him throughout the year. He didn't really pitch much. And he's expected to go into AAA this year, showcase his health, and then appear. And at first glance, the package isn't too exciting. It's like a 93, 94 mile per hour four-seamer and a sinker. There's a changeup and an 85 mile per hour gyro slider. The four-seamer isn't anything to write home about. The changeup doesn't really look that special. But the thing that's very fascinating to me is the sinker. It is two plane at 18 inches horizontal and 4 to 5 inches of vert. And so that's going like a bowling ball straight down and into the kneecaps of right-handers, right into their shins. So you pair that with a slider going away, and that is the kind of sinker that can do well against left-handers too. He just needs to nail that corner. And then you have a changeup underneath that, and then you have a slider going away to right-handers, and then you have a surprise four-seamer that Lauder does throw upstairs, and he favors that over lefties currently, at least he did when we saw those six starts in 24. And yeah, he was able to get out of jams, clearly, 1.17 ERA, 1.27 whip. I'm curious, this could be a workhorse kind of arm over time if he is able to really wrangle that sinker and command it beautifully. I'm not going to tell you who he is, but he is a dark horse sleeper for 2026 on the Reds. Carson Spires had UCL surgery last July. That's all we really know. And we don't know when he'll come back in 2026. He's also a kitchen sink guy with those 91, 92. And no. No, thank you. Graham Ashcraft moved to the bullpen last year for 62 games and zero starts. And he had some success there. Really bad whip. And I would be shocked if the Reds were like, okay, we're done. Come on back to the rotation after that. Like, no. He has like the worst extension, and 96, 97 mile per hour velocity feels like it should be better than it is, but he doesn't have the best command, and I feel like the extension is why that velocity is worse, and it's Graham Ashcraft. Don't trust Graham Ashcraft. You know this. Chase Petty's the last one I'll mention in this category, where Chase Petty was someone I thought was going to be like this hard-throwing sinker slider guy with really good command. And I was so wrong. It's really 95, 96. I mean, before he used to be able to push it higher than that with four seamers and sinkers. And then you have an 89, 90 mile per hour gyro slider that was, I still think, his best pitch. And then you have a 83, 84 mile per hour sweeper underneath or like past it, right? It's not enough. And it's not aggressive movement on the fastball and sinker. You would think there'd be more than there is. He had a 20% walk rate in the majors. He just walked everybody. And then he still had those walk issues across AAA throughout 2025. So he actually has the volume to suggest a call-up and another chance. And we might see that if they don't feel like Lauder's ready or Williamson is. But boy, Chase, you gotta get something back of control here. And I don't know what it's going to be. He's got to figure it out. Going on. As far as the other guys in the farm for the Reds, there's nothing that I'm going to tell you is exciting. There's Jose Franco, who's 25 and threw in AAA last year. He has a four-seamer that's dead zone, maybe with a little extra horizontal, but it does not have good extension. It has a slightly steep attack angle. And he has a curveball that is like an 84 mile per hour slider, gyro slider, but has a little bit extra depth than it's at 84. It's not really a curveball. And I'm sorry, not extra depth, extra sweep to it. It's like, why is this? I don't know. His changeup is also not a consistent pitch, so you do not want to go after Jose Franco. He's a right-hander. All of these are right-handers. There's Kevin Abel. He's a changeup-focused right-hander. He has a really good changeup, and then there's really not much else. But it is a really good changeup. 11 over 15 whiffs in the one start in AAA that he had last year. I don't like going for changeup-focused right-handers. I feel that they don't develop good sliders. They're more of a pronator than a supinator, right? And unless they have an overwhelming four-seamer paired with it, it's just not going to work out, and Kevin Abel does not have that overpowering four-seamer to pair with it. And Mason Morris is young in a single A. He was drafted in 2025. He throws mid to upper 90s. Which is awesome. It's a steep attack angle, sure. And he has a legit low 90s cutter. And then there's also a stabilizing slider in the upper 80s. He throws for strikes. It sounds awesome, but we just haven't seen him. It's going to be a while, likely, until we see Mason Morris. Maybe he just zooms up the system. We've seen that before from the Reds. Remember, Luis Castillo was promoted from AA back in the day. But, I mean, also, yeah, Chase Burns moved very quickly, too. It's possible Mason Morris is that guy. I mean, he's obviously the best prospect here. I'm looking forward to getting more data on him as well, and hopefully he doesn't have the empty velocity four-seamer at the end of the day. All right, that is it for the Cincinnati Reds. Thank you all so much for your support. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIP be low, and your strikeouts high.